a youth vaulting from one raft to the next, long leaps and high, and they vied with one another, trying to circle all the ring of rafts and dance on each, and so come round before the break of day. Arran danced with them, for the long dance is hailed on every isle of the archipelago, though the steps and songs may vary. But as the night drew on, and many dancers dropped out and settled down to watch or doze, and the voices of the chanters grew husky, he came with a group of high-leaping lads to the chief's raft, and there stopped while they went on. Sparrowhawk sat with the chief and the chief's three wives near the temple. Between the carven whales that made its doorways sat a chanter whose high voice had not flagged all night long. Tireless he sang, tapping his hands on the wooden deck to keep the time. "What does he sing of?" Arran asked the mage, for he could not follow the words, which were all held long, with trills and strange catches on the notes. "Of the gray whales, and the albatross, and the storm? They do not know the songs of the heroes and the kings. They do not know the name of Aerith Akbi. Earlier he sang of Segor, how he established the lands amid the sea. That much they remember of the lore of men. But the rest is all of the sea." Arran listened. He heard the singer imitate the whistling cry of the dolphin, weaving his song about it. He watched Sparrowhawk's profile against the torchlight, black and firm as rock. Saw the liquid gleam of the chief's wives' eyes as they chatted softly, felt the long, slow dip of the raft on the quiet sea, and slipped gradually toward sleep. He roused all at once. The chanter had fallen silent. Not only the one near whom they sat, but all the others on the rafts, near and far. The thin voices had died away like a far-off piping of seabirds, and it was still. Arran looked over his shoulder to the east, expecting dawn. But only the old moon rode low, just rising, golden among the summer stars. Then looking southward, he saw, high up, yellow Gobardon, and below it, the eight companions, even to the last. The rune of ending clear and fiery above the sea, and turning to Sparrowhawk, he saw the dark face turned to those same stars. "Why do you cease?" the chief was asking the singer. "It is not daybreak, not even dawn." The man stammered and said, "I do not know. Sing on. The long dance is not ended." "I do not know the words," the chanter said, and his voice rose high as if in terror. "I cannot sing. I have forgotten the song." "Sing another, then." "There are no more songs." "It is ended," the chanter cried, and bent forward till he crouched on the decking, and the chief stared at him in amazement. The rafts rocked beneath their sputtering torches, all silent. The silence of the ocean enclosed the small stir of life and light upon it and swallowed it. No dancer moved. It seemed to Arran then that the splendor of the stars dimmed, and yet no daylight was in the east. A horror came on him, and he thought, "There will be no sunrise. There will be no day." The mage stood up. As he did so, a faint light, white and quick, ran along his staff, burning clearest in the rune that was set in silver in the wood. "The dance is not ended," he said, "nor the night. Arran, sing." Arran would have said, "I cannot, Lord." But instead he looked at the nine stars in the south, drew a deep breath, and sang. His voice was soft and husky at first, but it grew stronger as he sang, and the song was that oldest song of the creation of Ea, and the balancing of the dark and the light, and the making of green lands by him who spoke the first word, the eldest lord, Segor. Before the song was ended, the sky had paled to grayish blue, and in it only the moon and Gobardon still burned faintly. the torches hissed in the wind of dawn. Then, the song done, Arryn was silent, and the dancers who had gathered to listen returned quietly from raft to raft as the light brightened in the east. "That is a good song," the chief said. His voice was uncertain, though he strove to speak impassively. "It would not be well to end the long dance before it is completed. I will have the lazy chanters beaten with Nilgu thongs." "Comfort them, rather," Sparrowhawk said. He was still afoot, and his tone was stern. "No singer chooses silence. Come with me, Arryn." He turned to go to the shelter, and Arryn followed him. But the strangeness of that daybreak was not yet done, for even then, as the eastern rim of the sea grew white, there came from the north, flying, a great bird. So high up that its wings caught the sunlight that had not shone upon the world yet, and beat in strokes of gold upon the air. Arryn cried out, pointing. The mage looked up, startled. Then his face became fierce and exulting, and he shouted out aloud, "Nam Hietha Arwa Ged Arkvaisa," which in the speech of the making is, "If thou seekest Ged, here find him." And like a golden plummet dropped, with wings held high outstretched, vast and thundering on the air, with talons which might seize an ox as if it were a mouse, with a curl of steamy flame streaming from long nostrils, the dragon stooped like a falcon on the rocking raft. The raft folk cried out. Some